Hey, all you podcast listeners. Today, Marcus interviews Claudia Cardenas, a nurse, runner and adventurer, a proud Latina, personal life coach, and founder of Dynamic Daughters, an organization dedicated to empowering young women through education and experience. Like so many of the empowered women we feature, Claudia has experienced tragedy, loss, and hardship. But despite that, or perhaps because of that, she has emerged to become stronger and has an intense fire to help others. She talks to Marcus about her love of running and hiking and how endurance sports give her the motivation and confidence to pursue her dreams. They also chat a little bit about what it's like to work as a nurse on the front lines in the middle of a pandemic. Claudia's kindness and compassion really shine through when you hear her talk about her life, her work with children and youth, and most importantly about her organization, Dynamic Daughters. She is so humble that the fact that she received Women of the Year 2020 in San Diego never even comes out. You can check out her website, dynamicdaughters.com, or find it on our website. I really hope you enjoy the interview. Listening to Marcus interview these amazing women never fails to give me hope and inspiration and motivates me to never give up. Our music was written and performed by She, spelled SH3, and produced by Android Beats. Check them out on our website. This podcast is sponsored by Femme Apparel. We believe in gender equality and use thought-provoking messaging to bring attention to gender disparity and to challenge the status quo to be more inclusive and equal. And with that, I'll hand you over to Marcus.
Good morning.
Hi, Marcus.
How are you, Claudia?
Good, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, it's great to finally see you and kind of meet you.
Yes, exactly. I know. Yeah, it's funny when you email so much all the time, you feel like you know somebody, but it's nice to still get that sort of face-to-face, right? As much as you get nowadays.
Definitely. How's the wife and kids?
They're good, thank you. Yeah, they're all doing very well. So we're staying healthy. We're staying active as much as we can. So. Yeah. How are things in California?
They're good. Weather's good. We're all trying our best to socially distance and stay healthy and whatnot, but it is what it is.
That's right. You guys are locking down a little bit again, aren't you?
Yeah, we've just closed down gyms, like salons and churches. We're kind of like reclosing again.
Yeah, well, hopefully not too long.
Hopefully not too long, and hopefully things get better soon.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you very much for getting up potentially early on a Sunday morning to do this. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for everything that you guys are doing. I think it's awesome. I love your shirts. I love that hat that you guys just came out with. It's super cute. So I'm a big supporter of your clothes. Awesome.
Thank you very much. So how do you say your last name? I want to make sure I get it right.
It's Cardenas.
Okay.
If you move your hands when you say it, it's easier to say. So,
oh, really? Cardenas.
There you go. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's get going. So I kind of wanted to, I'm going to base it off of, what we had already written about you, right? And I just thought that we could maybe sort of flesh out a little bit more your story and what it is you're doing. So your parents are one half American, one half Mexican, correct?
That's correct, yeah. My mom was born in Guadalajara, Mexico. Have you ever been to Guadalajara, or have you heard anything about Guadalajara?
No, I mean, I'm familiar with it, but I've never been there.
Yeah. I've never been there myself, but I'd like to go someday. But that's where my mom's from. So I come from a very traditional Hispanic background. My dad was born in Detroit, and here I am. So yes, that's correct.
And so do you have siblings?
I have an older brother. Yeah, just one older brother. I have a ton of cousins though. My grandma on my mom's side had 13 kids.
Wow.
At 13. And so just about every single one of those kids got married and had like four kids. I know my mom only had two, so that's on the like low side. Yeah. I have like a ton of cousins. So I have a huge family, and I love my family. I'm very blessed to have so much family.
Are you close with them? Like, do you talk regularly with a lot of them?
Not all of them, but I'd say the ones that are closer to my age, I'd say, yeah, we're pretty close, and we're all pretty supportive of each other, and if something were to happen to someone, like, the whole family would show up, and there's always someone there to help. And everyone's, you know, for graduations, we take up, like, the whole stadium, and we always make the most noise and everything. Yeah.
That's one of the many benefits of a large family, right? It comes with a large cheering squad.
Pros and cons to that, definitely.
Absolutely. So you had a bit of a pivotal moment, I guess, in your early teens when your father was diagnosed with cancer and then unfortunately succumbed to it, I guess, mm-hmm. a year later. Talk to us a little bit about that, what that was like for you, because that's such an important age, right, for mm-hmm. a young woman. And then to lose that father figure, that must have been really tough.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when I was 14, so prior to this, we were a nice, happy family, just regular old family of four. And, you know, my dad was my best friend, and I looked up to him a lot. And when I was 14, he was diagnosed with cancer. And so that whole year, you know, we were in and out of the hospital, and it was just crazy seeing him deteriorate over time, and just seeing him turn into this person who was just not like the dad that I knew, just so much weaker. He could barely talk. He could barely move. But you could see that, you know, he was still fighting. He was not giving up. And so to see him, you know, finally pass, and to have him pass at such a young age, I think when I was that, like, when I was going through it, I didn't realize, like, how much of an impact that maybe made for me until I was older and, you know, I kind of reflected on things. And in a way, it was like the worst and almost best thing that happened to me. Worst because obviously it was very sad to lose someone. And as I'm sure maybe you're familiar with losing someone, it's not easy, and it just, family dynamics change, and it's just like your world just changes. But it was also in a way like the best thing that happened to me, because losing him, I feel like really pushed me and motivated me to always want to make him proud. So in a way, I felt like I had more pressure, and I felt like, well, especially when I was younger and still now, when we die, well, we go to heaven, whatever heaven is to you or to anybody. And I believe that, you know, if you're in heaven, then you're probably looking down at your loved ones. And I didn't want my dad to, like, look down on me and be, like, disappointed. And I didn't want to not give him something good to talk about up in heaven with his heaven friends. So I felt like it really pushed me to just really be, like, the best version of myself and to just really always make him proud. I would do things and I'd always be like, this one's for you, Dad, or, you know, think like that. Oh, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm getting emotional. I didn't want to do that. I told myself I wasn't going to. Gosh. But yeah, my father is really special to me. And like I said, best and worst thing that's happened to me. So it's like kind of a bittersweet thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great way. If you have to look at it in some way, right? And I think that that's a really good way to look at it, because mm-hmm. you can use it as a source of motivation. At what point, at what age did you realize that this was shaping you in a positive direction?
Definitely not immediately. I think that I would do things like I'd, you know, go out of my comfort zone and I'd really push myself to do things and to just try to be like the best in whatever I did. And I mean, I did notice that, you know, pretty soon, but it wasn't until maybe like, I would say probably like in my early 20s that I like kind of looked back and I reflected and I was like, wow, like I really, you know, I've done a lot. And it was definitely because of, and you know, it's definitely because I feel like my father motivated me to do these things. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know,
I think you're amazing. You sound like you're a real fighter, because you had mentioned the years afterwards were really difficult for your family.
Oh yeah, that's true. It was super difficult, especially financially. And neither of my parents had a college education, and they barely finished high school. My dad was a salesman. He was like the best salesman ever, and not joking. He'd always like win all the awards and everything. So he was really good at what he did, and he supported us. But obviously when he passed away, and my mom wasn't working at the time when we were growing up. So she was used to not working. And I remember when he passed, financially, it was a really big struggle. And I could see it. It was such a big struggle for my mom financially. And she had to find work, and she would work like all the time. She was always at work. She was at work super early. She'd come home super late. And we were actually living like below in California, what's considered like the poverty line. So it was kind of difficult, especially growing up, like kind of seeing everybody else around me not having to like kind of go through the same struggle. And like, I just saw how just so many people had, I felt like people had it so much easier. I had to start working like when I was in high school, and I had to like work full time. And I think there's a difference between like, not that I didn't enjoy going to work, but I knew I had to do it. I knew that, well, if I didn't work, like, how was I going to pay for my prom dress? How was I going to, you know, afford to do any of these like school things, play sports? Because I didn't want to ask my mom for it, because I knew that she barely had the funds for it.
Yeah.
So that part was pretty difficult. But I guess it makes you get creative, and it makes you look out for scholarships. And I'm really good at saving now. I think I manage my money really well. So something positive, I think, came out of that.
Yeah, you can learn a lot through difficult times, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, it serves you quite well later on in life. So you're a nurse now, is that correct?
So yes and no. I was supposed to graduate in May, but our school had to pause everything because of coronavirus. Mm-hmm. So I'm like 4 weeks away from being a nurse.
Oh no.
I know. But I work in a hospital, and I work as a nurse aide. But we're supposed to go back to school, supposedly in August for 4 weeks. And then after that, I just take an exam, and then I'll be an official nurse. But I have been able to, since I work in the hospital, I do work on the COVID floor. I actually float, so I work on the COVID floor and other floors. And it's actually been very empowering to be at the front lines and to be able to help people who are going through this pandemic, who are actually, you know, victims of it. And at first, I remember I was actually really kind of terrified, obviously, because of the media and just, you know, how high the mortality rates were and how everyone was just kind of like panicking and everything. So we started getting our COVID patients right when that was happening. And so I remember just like being so scared, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm really going to go into this room and take care of this patient and, you know, potentially expose myself. And so I was scared at first, but I started to become more comfortable, and, you know, more comfortable with the proper PPE, because before, nobody used to use N95s. N95 masks were like pretty rare. And so, you know, even using one was a little bit intimidating, but now it's just like we use it all the time. So I'm super used to it. But it's really been really cool to be able to see people get better through this, and to just really be there for people, and, you know, just to make that positive impact for them, and just to help them in whatever way they can, because their battle's not an easy one either. So it's been really cool to be a part of it.
And yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, just the way, like, you know, staff is getting together too, and you can just really kind of sometimes sense like the camaraderie, and I don't know, it's been overall a positive experience, and I'm happy that I'm able to be a part of it, you know, and as a nurse aide. So it's been really cool.
Yeah, I find that that's really interesting. Actually, I didn't realize that you were directly involved, like on the front line during this pandemic in that way. And my wife and partner in this company, she's a doctor herself, but doesn't work. She deals with women's health, right? So she's not directly on the front lines of COVID. And where we live, we've been really lucky to not have a lot of cases. What's it like on the inside in an area that I would say has more cases than we do? What is it like amongst the staff that are actually working on the COVID floor in the COVID ward? Like, is everybody in relatively good spirits? Are they scared? Has it changed over time? Right, because you were scared at first, now you're not. What's it like?
Yeah, good question. At first, I would say a couple months ago, maybe. When did this all start? I think we had our first COVID patient in, let's see, maybe April, maybe March.
Yeah, late March, early April.
Yeah. And so when we had our first COVID patient, yeah, everybody was really scared. And some people handled it better than others, but the majority of people I feel were very scared. And at that time, we didn't have the largest supply of masks. So I do remember people fighting over masks. And I mean, not like physical fighting, but just like kind of verbally, things would escalate. And people, you know, staff like would refuse to go into rooms because there weren't masks. And so obviously patient care would suffer if nobody was going into that room because we didn't have a mask. So it was pretty chaotic. And then we had to start building more rooms that were like negative pressure rooms. Mm-hmm. So we had to utilize other floors and just create these, like, they're called like these ante rooms outside of a room out of like cardboard. So we'd have construction people inside the room, like inside the floor while we were trying to do nursing stuff. And so it was pretty hectic, but that didn't last very long, at least in my hospital. I would say a couple weeks, and then everything kind of got sorted out. And so since I float and there's other people who float too, you can, if I was giving report to somebody who had never worked with someone who had COVID, I could kind of just sense their hesitation, and I could sense that they're kind of nervous. But that, it was pretty easy to ease their nervousness once you explain everything to them and like, you know, this is how you do things. You know, if you do this, you're going to be fine. I've been working with them for months and I, you know, knock on wood, haven't gotten sick. I use, you know, do everything correctly, whatever. And people's anxiety seemed to just kind of lessen after that. But yeah, it kind of has been just this. At first it was just like a shock. Then people kind of got into the groove of it. A lot of staff, I feel like, did get burned out, and a lot of people were emotionally just, it was just a lot for them, especially in the ICU with so many losses, and there isn't a lot of good news per se in the ICU. So you could see, I could see some of my coworkers just, it was just emotionally difficult for them. But now I think the staff is just, everyone's just kind of used to it now. It's kind of like our new normal. And it is kind of tiring, but I think everyone's just hoping it's going to be over soon.
Right.
But everyone's very helpful, especially at this point now. Everyone just has the groove of things. Everybody knows how everyone feels about it. Nobody wants anyone to get sick. So people will help out as much as possible.
What would you say to people that, having now seen it, what would you say to people that say it's no big deal?
Okay, let me tell you. So there was this one lady I had. She was in the ICU and she had just gotten transferred to like a step up unit. So right from the ICU, it's like she's healthy enough to get out of the ICU, but she's still not in the best condition. And I was talking to her and she had like, all these bruises here, and she was just super weak and just coughing like crazy. She could barely breathe. her family can't come visit her because all the hospitals have closed off visitors to avoid any sort of transmission of the virus. And it's sad because imagine being sick and you can't even see your family. You can't have anyone there. You're just all alone. So it's just like a terrible situation to be in. And you're super uncomfortable. You can't breathe. You've got all this medication. You've got things up your nose that like trying to give you oxygen at such a heavy like rate. It irritates your nose. It's really uncomfortable. So point of the story, I was speaking to this lady and she kind of had kind of a bit of a bitter personality, and she was maybe not the friendliest person, which is understandable given her situation. But I was helping her kind of get herself together, and I could tell it was like such a, like even moving like just takes out so much of her energy and it's hard for her to breathe. So she just kind of broke down crying and she said, "I used to think all of this was fake and I didn't listen to wearing a mask and I didn't pay attention to any of those rules because I thought it wasn't real and I thought it was fake. And look at me now." And so I wish that lady could share her story with people who don't think this is serious or who feel like it's fake or whatever. And that's something I would share to someone who doesn't think this is something that's affecting people, because people will die and they won't even have their loved ones next to them. Like, oh, so I have plenty of stories of this, but you can cut me off whenever with the stories.
Oh, go ahead.
There was this one, oh, it was so sad, that I was listening to a doctor call a family member, and he was saying, you know, "We're gonna have to intubate your husband." And once he intubates somebody, their survival rate is about 20%, which is not very, it's not very likely that somebody will survive after being intubated. And so I just remember like the lady crying, and then I could hear her kids in the background and everyone was just crying like, "Well, why can't we go visit him? Like, why can't, like, are you sure you have to do this?" And oh, it's just so heartbreaking to see that. You know, it really sucks. Like the whole situation is really unfortunate. And I just couldn't imagine like not having any sort of closure and passing away like without your family. Like, I don't know. That's just to me, it's crazy.
It's tragic. It's
yeah.
Really, I mean, that's the only word really. It must make you mad as a healthcare worker to see people not take it seriously. It makes me mad, right?
Yeah, it does make me mad. And I don't know, just everyone, let's just all wear masks, like, you know, point in case, that's it. It's not a big deal. So not a big deal to wear masks, not the pandemic's not a big deal. But it does kind of upset me. And I do wish that people could see, you know, and experience the things that healthcare workers do, especially the ones working with COVID, because I really do think it would change people's perspectives.
Yeah, that's why you're like, cut me off. I'm like, no, like, we need more of these stories to come out so that people, you know, can understand the severity of the situation. I mean, certainly lots of people clear it without issue, but lots don't as well, right? And those are the ones that we need to be aware of, because when it doesn't go right, it really doesn't go right by the looks of it. So
we have little iPads where we can like help the patients like Zoom their family so they can see them that way. So I don't want people to think that they like there's no way that they can communicate with their family members. We do offer like a Zoom tablet that patients can use, but oftentimes the older population is not too keen with Zoom, so it's kind of difficult to even get that established, but that is an option.
Yeah, I mean, like, I totally understand that, because my dad actually is in the hospital right now, not COVID-related, but with something else. And they live, you know, in a different part of the country to me, so I wouldn't be able to go visit anyways. But, like, my mom can't go visit, right? And, like, that's really hard on everybody, and they're a little bit older, so, you know, something like Zoom and a tablet may not necessarily be something that they could you know, readily used to effectively communicate. So yeah, it's super tough. Like, we're not used to this separation in anything, right? Even social distancing, we're not used to it. It's not the way we're designed, but it has to happen. So it's really tough.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear about your dad. And it must be really hard for your mom too. She must be really frustrated, and like, it probably doesn't, like, it just wouldn't, like, it almost doesn't make sense. Like, why can't I go see my family member, right? But I hope he gets better. And
yeah, thank you. The hardest thing that she's found is you don't have access to the doc. It's not easy to get access to a doctor because you have to call, right? Well, maybe the doctor's busy at that point in time. They can't answer. They can't come to the phone, right? So you're talking to a nurse who can't give the same answers that the doctor can give. And so that's, these are all things that you never think of because we've never had to deal with them. But now all of a sudden, as a family member, it gets more difficult to navigate a healthcare situation. So there's lots of, like, I find spill down effects from what's happening.
Yeah.
Things definitely that we hadn't thought of before. So, but no, thank you. I appreciate that though. Hopefully he pulls through soon. So
yeah. Fingers crossed. I'm going to send you vibes your way to your dad. He'll get better.
So you really enjoy nursing?
I do. Yeah. It's been the learning curve. It's got its ups and downs. It's not always this glamorous thing, but it's very rewarding, and I love being able to help people, and I love learning, and I like medicine, so I think it's the perfect.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So when did you decide to become a life coach?
So that was, I was a health and wellness coach for a couple of years, handful of years, when I first graduated. So I got my undergrad in public health, and I worked for a California public school system as a health and wellness coach. And I would do a lot of small group discussions and presentations on like stress management, and part of my job with that was to also be like a coach for this center that we have in San Diego for orphans, for kids who, you know, are up for, who are hopefully to be adopted. And so that was actually my favorite part of the job, because a lot of them, well, it was a wide range. It was, you know, kids, babies up to 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds. And just some of the stories that they would share with me, and just the conversations that we would have, really kind of inspired me to want to focus my coaching more on like a life coach, and specifically on kids around that age. Just because I feel like they were always very excited to see me. They would always tell me such positive things, like, you know, you're really helping me, you know, go get through this. And I could just see the positive impact that I was having with them. And I also really enjoyed working with them. So I wanted to pursue coaching a little bit more, which is why I became a life coach, and specifically why my organization, Dynamic Daughters, focuses on young girls and enhancing their skills and giving them tools to just kind of be like the best versions of themselves, to really just be ambitious, to be tough, to, you know, prepare them for whatever situation may come their way, especially, you know, within that time frame that's just so important to child development. Because especially kids who were orphans, they didn't oftentimes they weren't told a lot of things that a lot of other kids were. So I want to make it my mission to make sure that all kids, and I focus particularly on girls because I'm a girl and I feel like I can connect more with them, but I want all kids to just really know that they are important, know that they are capable of greatness. I want them to just dream big, and I want to help them get through whatever obstacle that they're going through. And I want to inspire them, guide them, help them, just help them become that person that they're destined to be.
So what exactly is a life coach? Like, what does a life coach do for a client?
Yeah, so a life coach can do a lot of different things, and it kind of just depends on the client and what their needs are. A life coach will pretty much create a blueprint to help a person either overcome certain obstacles, help a person create a plan to, you know, attack whatever sort of issue is approaching, to guide them in making the best decision for themselves. A life coach will kind of help a person come to an answer through asking them questions, through providing activities, through giving resources, you know, providing inspiration and accountability, especially. So a life coach isn't going to like give you the answers to everything, but a life coach is going to help you and guide you. And I'm not going to like, you know, snap my fingers and magically you become this awesome person. I'm going to help you become whoever it is you want to become. And I'm going to help you reach whatever goals you're going to reach. And I'm going to challenge you. And it may be uncomfortable, but you're going to grow and it's going to be better based off of that person's goals. So you have to set goals with them and realistic goals, create a timeline. Just provide positive experiences that will really help that person make that connection that this is, okay, this is how I'm going to go about things, or this is how I'm going to go about things. And, you know, people want coaching for various different reasons, and it just depends on the person and the client.
And so when did you form or create Dynamic Daughters?
So actually very recently, during my... probably about a year ago, short answer. During probably, I think, my second year of nursing school, I knew that I've always wanted to create some sort of organization. And I had an original idea that I thought, oh, maybe I'll just keep focusing more, you know, on health and wellness, because I had done that for so long and I was really good at that, but it just didn't really feel right. And so I don't know. I think one day I just woke up and I was like, you know what? I think with all of the previous experiences that I've had with working with the foster care kids, I think I can make a really big impact on kids. And I don't know, one thing kind of just led to the other. And the next thing you know, I created Dynamic Daughters, and we are an upcoming organization. I'm still finishing the paperwork to make it an official nonprofit. And I've been working this past year on just creating all of the lessons and the workshops and our website and everything. So it's still a bit of a work in progress, but we are kind of reaching that point where we were going to have an event in August, but due to COVID, we have to cancel it. So we're focusing more on personal coaching.
So it's a nonprofit organization?
It's in the works, yeah.
Okay.
I'm waiting to hear back from the Secretary of State to see if it's been approved.
And you say we, do you have other people involved with this, or are you solo right now?
It's the royal we, you know, when you say we, it sounds a little bit, people are more likely to listen. So I call it, it's the royal we, but it's just me at this point. I do have like my brother who all like, hey bro, what color do you like this shirt in more? Things like that I'll share things. But as of right now, it's just the royal we.
And so is this something that you would try to do some fundraising for, or I'm going to have to assume that there's going to be some cost involved, right? And so what's the model there? I'm curious.
Yeah. So, as of now, I'm funding everything. And once I or we, Royal We, become an official organization or nonprofit, I will start to reach out to people for like donations. We are going to have a clothing line, so I'll start selling that as well and start to make more funds and have people sponsor it. And my hope is to be able to offer these workshops and classes and everything to lower income communities who can't necessarily afford these kind of events for free. But obviously I need funding, so I'm going to offer other workshops and cater them to communities who can't afford them and use that for funding to go to the communities who can't.
Perfect. Yeah, that makes sense. So is your plan then to approach schools?
Eventually, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm starting to reach out to community centers in different areas in Southern California. And it's been a little bit difficult just because a lot of the things that I want to do are kind of in person and require kind of like groups of people. So with all these restrictions, it's been kind of difficult to move forward. So I'm trying to adapt and create, you know, fun workshops where people can do them at home and online. So a workshop that I will be hosting soon through Zoom is it's like a mother-daughter workshop, and every pair will come and pick up this surprise box from the community center, and it'll have all these activities and all just, it's a box full of a bunch of stuff that will be utilized during the workshop that's going to be guided through Zoom. So it's been a learning process, and I've really had to be like get creative with all of this to be able to move forward with the organization and still make it as fun as I envision it to be for people.
What are your long-term plans for the organization? I mean, the work sounds amazing. I think it's such an important demographic that probably could use more help. And so, because they're the formative years, they're so influential. So I think it's great what you're doing. What's the long-term goal for Dynamic Daughters?
The long-term goal for Dynamic Daughters is to become a household name. I would love for this to be something that just flourishes, and for Dynamic Daughters to really just, you know, be something that all girls want to sign up for, to be something that people see and recognize, like the logo, and recognize that, oh, you know, this is where girls go to become empowered and tough, and, you know, we're about family, we're about making the world a better place. And I want it to be something that at least people in Southern California know about. But I'd love it to like live on forever, even beyond me. So if I ever have daughters, maybe they could take over and they could become the real Dynamic Daughters.
There you go. That's an awesome goal. I love what you're doing there. Do you think that your health and wellness coaching experience helps you as a life coach as well? Like, do you find that they go hand in hand a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Because I know that's something that a lot of young girls deal with, is body image and healthy eating and forming healthy habits. And a lot of girls struggle with either like wanting to lose weight or gaining weight and body image in general. So having that experience and knowing like, okay, this is how you should be eating, this is what's recommended, you know, these are foods that are good for you. If you want to lose weight, this is the healthy way to go about it, and this is the unhealthy way to go about it. And, you know, these are good habits you want to have. I really feel like it really does help me, because I can use that knowledge and pass it on to my client. And I think it can make a big difference in their lives, because not a lot of young girls maybe know like the science behind our foods and why our body needs a certain amount of calories, and you know why exercising for 10 hours isn't a healthy thing and whatnot. So I do feel like it has really helped me.
Can you, do you think in the future, you're focusing mostly on young girls now, but obviously the gender equality part of this conversation needs to include, you know, adolescent boys as well, right? Because mm-hmm. they're obviously a big part of the conversation. Can you see yourself going in the direction where you would bring in teen boys into the conversation as well?
Yes, I love where you're going with this. Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm a big supporter of men as well. Like, I'm all for men's health. I actually believe that and feel that based off of my experiences. I don't think that, you know, men's health is as promoted as maybe women's health. And I feel like men suffer as a result of that. And I am all about equality. Equality, men, women, right here. The reason I chose to target girls specifically was because I felt like personally I could do a better job of relating to girls, and I feel like that audience would be more likely to listen to me versus if I was trying to, you know, talk to a group of boys who probably are like, well, she has no idea what we're going, like, she doesn't get it. Like, why would we listen to her? She's a girl, you know? So I would love to, in the future, definitely expand and incorporate both genders for sure. Because I think that boys and girls should receive these types of opportunities, definitely. But as of now, I'm starting small, starting with a little niche, and then I'll work my way out.
Oh, absolutely. You want to start with what you know.
Yeah.
and then go from there. So would you credit your upbringing and your parents and your experiences there with giving you the empowerment that you need to create this organization? Like, do you tie in your do you feel your past has been such an important part of your future?
In terms of,
like, do you draw strength from your past in order to go through with creating an organization and trying to implement change? Because it takes a lot of courage, right? It's a big deal to step up to the plate and do something like this. And I just wonder if, yeah, if what you went through in the past with your upbringing, does it give you a unique perspective on what some of these young girls might be going through? And do you draw on that as you go through the process?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I think so. I feel like I've gone through just an array of situations growing up, and I feel like I've experienced a lot in the short amount of time that I've been on this earth. And I feel like because of that, I'm able to really relate to just about anyone, and really relate specifically to young girls. You know, I know what it's like to, you know, lose a family member. I know what it's like to grow up feeling like, you know, things around you aren't fair. I know what it's like to, you know, struggle with school pressure, academic pressures. And, you know, I know what it's like to feel like you don't measure up to something, to feel like maybe it would be easier to just give up, and to feel like, you know, to feel like maybe I'm not worth enough. I think a lot of, and I think this is probably something that most girls, and I don't want to like generalize, but I'm sure a lot of people kind of feel like that. And because I too have felt that way, and I've gone through it, and, you know, I've come out okay, I feel like I can really help girls who've kind of gone through that situation too. Yeah.
So you're also into endurance sports, right?
I am. I'm a crazy person like that. Yeah.
So tell us what you've done.
Okay. Well, not a lot, because I know there's a lot of really awesome endurance athletes out there, and I don't want to shame them with my little petty accomplishments, but I'll tell you. So let's rewind a little bit. I wasn't always the most athletic person. So for me, doing some of the things that I've done is like a huge accomplishment, because I never thought that I'd be possible. Like, I'd imagine myself doing the things that I'm doing. In high school, I first got into endurance sports when I realized that I didn't like track that much. I always liked to try new things, and I always wanted to be a part of some sport or whatever. So I'd sign up for like everything. And I ended up signing up for cross country. And I was like the last person to always cross the finish line when I first started my sophomore year. And I didn't like that. And I was like, you know what? I don't like being last. So I worked really, really hard over the years. And I remember my senior year. So clearly I really started to like running. I didn't realize how much I liked running in high school until I left cross country. But in high school, I just didn't like being last. And I just wanted to be like at least at the front of the pack. So I just worked really hard. And my senior year, I became a captain, which was like crazy. And I was at the front of the pack. And it was awesome seeing like my teammates being like, Claudia, what happened? Like, last year you were like at the end and now you're up front. And I was like, well, I just ran every day. And so it was cool to see how my hard work was paying off with that. I'm a big supporter of sports because I think and I know that they can really help boost young girls' confidence. So I support sports a lot. So then it just kind of like trickled down from there. I did cross country. Then I signed up for a half marathon. And then I was like, well, this was really fun. Why don't I go for the full marathon? So then I did a full marathon, and just like training for it was just like crazy. Like, I'd have weeks where I'd go on like 13 mile runs one day, 17 mile runs the next day. And then I remember the feeling of like finishing my first marathon. It was just like so awesome. Like, 26 miles later, here I am. And I felt empowered. I felt like, shoot, if I can run 26 miles, like, I can do anything. And so then I started getting into hiking a little bit more. And one of the first like big summits that I'm super proud of is Mount Whitney. Are you familiar with Mount Whitney? I don't know if it's like only a California thing, but
I've heard of it. I don't really know much about it.
It's the tallest mountain in the contiguous United States. So pretty much the tallest mountain in all the U.S. except for Alaska. And its elevation is at, I believe it's 14,500 feet. And it's like a 23-mile hike. And the first time I did it with my brother, and we did it all in one day. Most people take like 2 days, 3 days to do it. But it's just like, it was just such an awesome feeling knowing like I am at the top, like at the highest peak of the whole US except for Alaska. And so it was just like super awesome. Like, and it wasn't easy. It was, so after 10,000 feet, you can start to feel symptoms of, altitude sickness. Your body's not receiving enough oxygen. The air is thinner. So it's just like even moving, just like you move really slow because it's like your body's not used to having decreased levels of oxygen. And so knowing all of that and being able to summit in one day at a pretty good pace, I just felt like super proud. And so I got into this like obsession with summiting mountains. I don't know, when I like, you know, it makes me feel like a superwoman. I'm like climbing a mountain, I get to the top and I'm like, wow, this is so cool. And I look back and I'm like, oh my God, look what I just did. So I would love to one day make it to the top of Mount Everest. I know it's really dangerous and stuff, but I think I probably would maybe do it as like when I'm trying to find a final resting place, just in case. But yeah, I would love to do that. And I'd love to also qualify for the Boston Marathon. So those are my two big endurance related goals. And that's kind of how I got into it and how I've come to this point. And you can stop me too whenever, because I
can. No, that's awesome.
I can ride these mountains all day.
I went through and still kind of am a period where I was really obsessed with learning about mountaineering and mountain climbing. I haven't done it. Like I haven't summited any sort of peaks.
Did you say Mount Rainier or?
No, mountaineering. Like,
oh, mountaineering.
Yeah, like I was obsessed with Everest for a while. I knew everything about it. So yeah. I understand the fever. I've never done it. I haven't climbed anything of any significance, but I completely.
We got to do this. Marcus, we can't just not do this.
My one of these. Kill me if I try to plan a trip up Mount Everest. Yeah. But your marathon statement, I've run one marathon and a couple halves. I ran the New York City Marathon in 2016. Nice. And it was the coolest experience when you cross the finish line. Like, I totally get what you're saying. The thing that I found even almost more satisfying, and I'm curious what your take on this is, was the training itself, because I went from couch to marathon in 8 months or whatever it was, right? Like, I was a staunch anti-runner and then I decided to give it a go. But the process of going through the training and hitting the milestones, and you really have to dedicate yourself to it. Like you said, you're doing long runs multiple times a week sometimes, right? And it was such a mental challenge, but such a rewarding challenge when you completed it. Like, when it came to race day, barring a breakdown that I wasn't aware of going to happen regardless, like, it was almost a foregone conclusion that I would finish the race, right? Because you had trained so much up until that point. I found that so rewarding and so applicable to other things that I do in life now. I'm just wondering if you got any of the same sort of like responses within yourself to the training process.
I totally know what you're talking about. And like, just hearing you like describe what you're describing, like, I feel like I can feel it. Like, I know, I totally know what you mean. And yeah, definitely. Like, the process of training for a marathon is just, it's like this beautiful, like, painful, just, I feel like, really pushes you kind of experience. And I don't know. I feel like everyone should run a marathon. Like, I feel like it, yeah, it really, like, mentally, I feel like now I don't know. I feel like I can just run as long as you like tell me to. If I could do a marathon, I could probably tell myself I could do more. And like, I don't know. I can also apply it to other things in life. I read this book when I was training for a marathon. It's called like Born to Run. And it was a really good book. It's about this indigenous tribe in Mexico. They're called like the Tarahumara people. They run like 100 miles like a day and like barefoot.
Barefoot. I've heard of this book. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you read it?
No, I haven't read it yet, but I've been told to read it.
Read it. I've got a copy. I can ship it. So there was a point in the book where it was kind of giving advice to people who are running a marathon. And it was saying that if you just kind of focus on like, just envision yourself like crossing that finish line and just really like mentally just have that finish line in your mind and know that there is going to be like an end or, and just, it was like all these like mental tricks to kind of help you go through the marathon, but also enjoy it. And like, I definitely apply these to like everyday life. Like, you know, oh, it was set your eye on the prize. And if you just remind yourself, okay, like, you know, I'm running here to get to the finish line. That's my prize. It was shown, they did a study. It was shown that people will perform better. And so I feel like, you know, I kind of, attribute that, or I try to incorporate that into other aspects of life, like, you know, whether it's I'm going through a hard time during school or during work or whatever it may be, you know, I'm like, okay, set your eye on the prize. Like, you can do this, you know? So yeah, I do find myself kind of applying a lot of running things to everyday life.
Yeah, and I just found that you really, you learn your boundaries and your limits, and you, I learned anyways, and I'm not trying to make this about me, I don't mean to hijack this interview, but I found that for myself, my limits were too low, right? Like, I didn't think I could do something, but I could. And I just think that you had mentioned earlier that sport, you really encourage sport for young women and young men. And I agree, because I think it's such a great way to learn about yourself and to feel the reward of trying to push through a barrier that you had. And that is so applicable to so many things in life, because we're going to be going through a lot of challenges that are way worse than trying to, you know, bang out a 13-mile run, right? But if you can do that and you can push through that pain, then you know that you can do that with other things in your life. So I applaud when you said that. I was applauding in my mind. I'm like, yes, it is such an important thing for kids to partake in, aside from all the social stuff that they get from it, but just from like learning goal setting, like you said, and eye on the prize and pushing through, it's very, very valuable, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's awesome. I totally agree with everything that you said. And I don't know, I always try to encourage people, hey, you want to run a marathon with me? You want to go for a half marathon? I'll bring my little cousins. I'll force them to, I'll be like, oh, let's go get ice cream. But first, let's go on a hike. And like, you know, they'll complain the whole way. And they'll be like, oh, is this done? I thought we were going to get ice cream. But at the end, I can see that they're just like, they're really proud of themselves. And then they'll be like, wow, like I did that. Like, that's crazy. And I can see even within my cousins how even just like a hike or anything kind of makes them feel, and how hopefully it's helping them see that they can do anything.
Yeah, that's an awesome message. I love what you said there. That's great. And that, yeah, that applies so perfectly to what you're trying to do with young girls. I think it's a great, great message. Well, when Laura and I travel to California next, I'll have to let you know, maybe we can do, what was it called, Mount Whitney?
Yes, let's do it.
Because we love hiking all the time, right? So if it's a hike and you don't need tons of specialized gear, maybe we can make a trip of it and you can lead the way.
I will be honored to, gladly. I'll bring a red carpet and everything.
You're too nice. Well, this has been super awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think you're amazing. I think, right from the first message, when I saw your Instagram thing, actually, I was like, this is a really inspiring young woman. And I really hope that she wants to reach out and talk to us. And so I'm so thankful that you did. I think you're doing amazing work. And I really, really appreciate your story. I know that, you know, we got a little bit personal at the beginning there, but it just, you know, it's all so inspiring. And I'm just so thrilled you chose to share it with us. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm really thrilled and honored that you have me here, and that you reached out to me, and so thankful for that. And I wish you guys the best Femme Apparel.
Thank you.
Coming. You guys are awesome. I love all the photos that you guys posted. They're great. They're really great posts. The quality is awesome. And I love what you guys are doing. And again, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for your time. We are going to hike Mount Whitney. We have to do this, like, with or without me. I'm expecting you and your wife to make it to the top. I'm hoping for a summit photo.
Well, we've stayed in it now, so we got to make it happen at some point, right?
Sorry, it got a little cut off. Can you repeat that?
I said, well, we've stated it now. We've said it. Oh. We've kind of drawn the line in the sand. I guess we need to do it now, right?
We've got listeners who are going to hold us accountable to this. So they're waiting for the photo. So we can't keep them waiting too long. But I know you have two daughters, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, well, how old are they?
10 and 8.
Well, best of luck with your daughters, and I wish them the best, and I hope, and I'm sure they will with parents like you, you too. I hope, and I know that they're going to become awesome women, and they're probably already really awesome girls, and I'm sure they're such a joy to have in your life, and I wish you the best with them, and I hope that you and your family stay happy and healthy, and we will stay in touch.
Absolutely, well, absolutely. Thank you very much, and thank you for what you do as a nurse on the front line for your community. That's really awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, well, it was great speaking with you, and keep on empowering women. And if you keep empowering women, I'll keep empowering women, and then we'll just have all these empowered women.
Deal.
All right. Well, it was great speaking with you.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye.